Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. The following presentation features Emily Coulter Thompson from the Oregon Public Health Division. Since 1996, she has worked in the movement to end sexual violence. During the Roots of Change conference in Portland, Oregon, she discusses engaging men in violence prevention.
The issues around engaging men in violence prevention, they're loaded with complexity. So I'd like to share some of my experiences in the movement to shed some light on the undertones that are here at this conference. Please keep in mind that I speak from the perspective of a white, middle-class, able-bodied, queer woman identified from Generation X. Also, I have to give the disclaimer that the views expressed in this presentation do not necessarily represent the views of the Department of Human Services or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I started out as a peer educator at Miami University in Ohio. I was raising awareness of feminism and sexual violence, domestic violence, and I presented to student groups and marched in the Take Back the Night marches, as many of you have done. I started Miami University's first clothesline project display, which, if you're not familiar, it's a national collection of t-shirts designed by survivors of sexual and domestic violence that are color-coded by the type of assault that people have experienced. And that's now an annual event on campus. I had a lot of energy and enthusiasm starting out as an organizer, but I didn't know what primary prevention meant. I knew I had found my life's work, but I didn't know how to do prevention. All I knew was that my friends and other women on campus seemed to be coming out of the woodwork at those Take Back the Night speakouts and sharing their survivor stories. And I was getting angry because it just seemed I had to do something because the injustice was too profound, and it still is. At the time, only women could march in the Take Back the Night marches and attend the speakouts at Miami. A few men in a fledgling white ribbon campaign group, they organized a concurrent event for men. I righteously defended Take Back the Night as women-only space. I thrived on working with all women. It was those spaces that helped me to define my own voice. While I felt connected to a movement larger than myself, I couldn't imagine working closely with men at that time. And that was for a number of reasons. One of them being the question in my mind was, how was I supposed to trust men knowing that men perpetrate the vast majority of violence, especially violence against women? I felt tremendous ownership over the work. I was not about to hand it over to men so that they could take credit for it. Working with men also seemed far too complicated politically. And besides, as a woman and as a survivor, I knew how to do it best. I know I'm not alone in thinking these thoughts. These concerns are still very alive in our movement. However, since then, our movement has made some notable improvements, including the emergence of men's violence prevention organizations. For example, in 1995, our esteemed keynote speaker, Dr. Lolo Hong, founded Men Against Violence at Louisiana State University. It was the first student organization of its kind and scope in the United States. 2 years later, the DC organization Men Can Stop Rape began their work to redefine male strength as part of preventing men's violence against women. In 2001, 2 years after I left my alma mater, Miami, they started a MARS group, which there means Men Against Rape and Sexual Assault, a student group which remains active today. That MARS group, not to be confused with Oregon MARS, which is Male Advocates for Responsible Sexuality. So you can learn more about other campus violence prevention initiatives by attending workshops on that track during the conference. These organizations are signs of visible progress, but they don't explain how I came to change my thinking about primary prevention or engaging men. So I'll tell you some more about my experiences. After undergrad, I earned a Master of Social Work at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and I have to give a shout out to my former professor, Rich Tolman, there in the back, who is here for the Men's Studies Association meeting. He was one of my early mentors. And I became an advocate for survivors of sexual and domestic violence. I witnessed the devastation on a daily basis, including evenings, weekends, on call at 2 a.m. And I tried to balance the work by doing trainings and community organizing, but I still felt myself burning out. I knew that for me, the work was not sustainable in the long term. And I originally got involved in the movement because I wanted to create social change, not place band-aids on a problem that seemed to have no end in sight. It didn't seem fair to me that women were shouldering the burden of the issue, not only as victims, but as advocates. I knew I wanted to do the work differently, I just wasn't sure how. Then I met another professor named Dr. Miyako Yoshihama. She's a champion for community organizing and an international expert on domestic violence in Asian and Asian Pacific Islander American communities. I worked with her to help start a grassroots organization called New Visions, Alliance to End Violence in Asian and Asian American Communities. New Visions' mission is very powerful. It's to inspire and support sustainable community action for ending violence against women in Asian communities of Southeast Michigan. Rather than provide services, local Asian community members and domestic violence-related organizations work together to challenge community norms and attitudes that contribute to domestic violence and develop socioculturally effective strategies to end domestic violence. This was my first experience with primary prevention, though at the time I didn't have the language to describe it as such. New Visions is an inspiring community-driven organization that addresses the root causes of violence in culturally effective ways. And I really think we can learn from their example. To this day, it's some of the most valuable work experience I've had because it challenged me to envision a new way of doing our work and to believe that working together, any community can mobilize to end violence. Then in 2003, I moved to Oregon and volunteered on the committee to write Oregon's Sexual Violence Prevention Plan. I began learning about the theory and language behind primary prevention, the socio-ecological model, the public health philosophy that supports all of our work here today. Again, I took a job as an advocate at Sexual Assault Support Services in Eugene, which at that time was also a group working with all women. And I helped to create what's now Engaging Change. You can talk to Jenny Lohr if you want to learn more about it. She's here representing it's a prevention project focused on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, questioning communities. 2 years later, I was tired again. I was feeling the burnout, and I retreated for a month to become a certified yoga instructor. Then when I returned, public health's philosophy of primary prevention was calling to me because I really wanted to get back to addressing the root causes of violence. Now I've been working with DHS, the Public Health Division, for 3 years, and I'm convinced that we must work together to end violence and move our thinking beyond simply raising awareness and providing services. We really must envision our world. What does it look like without violence? What are we trying to create? These are the roots of change. I've also realized that changing root causes means that men must be engaged, because ultimately, only men can decide to change their behavior. I used to believe that a grassroots movement of feminist women could end violence, and I was wrong. Women, we cannot do it alone. For these roots to really change, we all need to work together. We, meaning women, men, intersex, trans, genderqueer folks. We must expand outside our comfort zones to work with people in all disciplines, people who may not seem like our natural partners, but they share critical pieces of the puzzle. I sincerely believe that we all have a role to play in ending sexual violence, regardless of gender, profession, one's position along the spectrum of radicalism, because I know we often disagree. But most importantly, we all need a common understanding of what prevention is so we can work towards similar goals. And that's what Roots of Change, this conference, is really about. It's beginning that prevention dialogue. So working together sounds great, But we all know it's much easier said than done. And I feel it's necessary to call out some of the dynamics that get in our way of working together. So at the risk of exploiting the gender binary, I'm going to call us out by gender. Women, including myself here, we need to be more willing to engage and work with men. That means rebuilding the trust that oppression and violence has whittled away. We have to risk confronting our own victimization, even that residual stuff that we think is already dealt with. We need to acknowledge that many men are victims too, and simultaneously hold men accountable when they behave in sexist ways. We also need to let go. We need to create space for men to have meaningful roles in the movement, because no one population can end these atrocities alone. We also need to trust that there's enough room in this movement for leadership of all genders. At the same time, we must examine our own internalized sexism and recognize that worshiping men's contributions in the movement only enhances their male privilege. We need to value our own expertise and our tireless efforts that brought us to where we are today. Does this sound doable? Just a few simple tasks. Fortunately, we can attend some of the workshops at this conference on the Engaging Men track to learn how to do this more effectively. Men, you must embrace your responsibility to make change. Your strengths in the movement are that you have the power to influence change among other men. As you do this, honor women's leadership and expertise, and be patient when women don't automatically trust you. You must be accountable to women and mindful when people elevate your work simply due to your status as male. You must be willing to confront your own internalized homophobia, the fear of being gay or being perceived as gay, to be stronger allies to women, and to create safe spaces for gay and trans men. Discuss issues of race, class, sexual orientation, and other isms, and seek education to do so more effectively. One way you can do this is by joining Oregon Men Against Violence listserv, which is a newly growing electronic community that is going to become in-person meetings also as that group gains momentum. Have dialogue with other men about the over-sexualization of women and the complex connections between pornography, the sex industry, and violence. Check out the sex industry themed workshops of this conference to learn more about that. People who don't identify with the labels man, woman, male, female, maybe you identify as trans, genderqueer, or intersex, or another term that I'm not mentioning, you are welcome here. And you have incredibly valuable insights about sex and gender based on your lived experience. Your wisdom is needed, and your safety at this conference is a high priority. And I can imagine that talking about men's violence against women can feel exhausting, because it may seem like you're left out of the conversation. I share your frustration, and I think we need a more inclusive model that's not limited to binary definitions of sex and gender. Let's work together to create one. This conference presents a safe space for us to begin talking about that. In order to transcend gender and transform social norms, we all must learn how to discuss the complexities of sex and gender. We must examine how masculinity is shaped by multiple forms of oppression, including racism, classism, ableism, heterosexism, nationalism, educational elitism, just to name a few. Every culture has aspects that reinforce men's violence, also known as risk factors, as well as strengths that support nonviolence or protective factors. The Cultures and Communities track of this conference features several workshops that will help us address the tough questions related to oppression. And plenary speaker Byron Hurt is certainly going to challenge us and inspire us with his analysis of how to engage men in ending racism and sexism. To envision the world as we want it to be, we need to be positive and creative. Our movement has been so reactive, always fighting against the violence and focusing on the negative. So I ask you, what is it that we stand for? How can we become a movement of positive energy and intention? something that's so enticing that people can't help but want to join us. I think we can learn a lot from youth and their work to promote healthy sexuality. At the conference, you can check out the Youth Sexuality and Violence Prevention Workshops to be enlightened by their visions. My life mission is to create a culture of liberation in which all beings thrive. A culture of healthy, positive sexuality, a culture of nonviolent communication. Check out Marshall Rosenberg's book if you haven't already. It's called Nonviolent Communication, or NVC. A culture of self-awareness and how our actions impact others. A culture of love and respect. A love so deep that we're willing to forgive perpetrators and historical oppression. So deep that we're able to see the humanity and good in everyone. So powerful that we can believe wholeheartedly that individuals really can change. That communities, relationships, institutions, society really can change. It's much harder to trust, to let go, and to risk being vulnerable than it is to contract, to shut down, and to keep doing what's familiar. As we say in the yoga community, it's all practice. I've learned a lot about how to sustain social justice work from the yoga community. To truly create social change, we must start with ourselves. Each moment is an opportunity to practice observing ourselves and our interactions with others. In this spirit, I invite each of us to consider this conference as a mini community. Starting right here and now, we can model what a loving community looks like. For example, listen when your inner voice tells you you need a snack or you need to get some fresh air. When someone pushes your buttons, and I guarantee you if you're paying attention in these sessions, something will. Take a moment and notice what's coming up and take a moment to yourself before you respond, if you decide to respond. Observe when you're nearing your threshold, when it would be wise to pause before you end up saying something you don't mean. Because yes, even violence prevention workers, we have a tendency to take our anger out on each other. Practicing loving self-awareness will help us to spend more time connecting and sharing gratitude for each other as allies, as we should be. And we need to take care of our community. It's precious. As Dr. Hong says in the title of one of her powerful articles, while breaking the silence, we need to make laughter. We're all learning, and our ability to work together as men, trans, intersex, queer, women, that's what's going to ensure the success of our movement.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.